You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday afternoon, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, it's a strange time of year because I think the South African schools are coming back from their holidays. So the kids are coming back, so therefore, by definition, the parents are coming back, if they're good parents, that is. But in Europe, in Britain, cross-continental Europe, they're just about to go on holiday. So there's lots of sort of market disruption, quiet periods, markets being pushed around a little bit too much than they would normally be because of illiquidity. So it is quite strange. But I still can't believe that the S&P is now above 5,600. Amazing stuff.
No, I know. It is. It's quite remarkable. And today, another very good day. I think the job numbers on Friday perhaps just sealed a rate cut in September. I think you can hear it from the talk as well from Fed governors. There's still a few chaps on the very right, you know, who still insist, well, if things get bad, you know, we might have to put up rates and that. No one believes it. So I think the market is fully discounted the September and one more rate cut. And you can see it in the bond rate. So it's given the markets a bit of lift. What I didn't expect, and I'm very happy about it, is that it's still technology shares that are leading the way. And we're still seeing, you know, strong gains in tech. And the other side of the market kind of remains mixed. But, Lindsay, there's so much politics. I mean, you know, how do you digest it all? How do you try and understand what happened in the UK? And I know it was forecast, but not such a landslide. And then the whole turnaround in France. So, and then we still got absolute obsession with the US press and the US media over Biden. You know, it just doesn't stop. He's putting his feet down. He's stamping his ground. He's not going to give up. And so it goes. But I still think there's huge pressure on him. So a lot of, you know, mainly politics now, which are dominating the headlines more so than what we're seeing in the economy and in the markets.
The UK is a bastion, a beacon of stability when it comes to politics because, okay, you've got the Labour Party, you've got the Conservative Party, and you've got the Liberal Democrats, and you've got the Reform UK, but they'll just disappear, hopefully, because they're horrible, horrible people. But, yeah, the Labour Party's done extremely well. And I must admit, I was a little bit concerned about Sir Keir Starmer, but I now see his cabinet, and I see that these people are actually really, really set on doing a good job. If you're in a job for 14 years, which the Tories were, it's almost like a monopoly. And monopolistic systems promote inefficiencies, David, as you well know. Yeah. And that's what the Conservatives became. They became an inefficient monopoly. So I'm grudgingly pleased that Sir Keir Starmer is in number 10 Downing Street, and it'll be good for Britain. As for France, well, they're in tatters. They're all over the place. They don't know what's going to go on now. It was going to be the right, it was going to be the left, and now they've got three parties, and they have to form a coalition. They don't like each other. The French people don't like each other. So it's going to be chaos. And this is not a small economy.
No, this is, I don't know, you know, the French, I don't know how you interpret it. I mean, if you read French history, this is nothing unusual. It's always all over the place.
Yes.
You know, where you stand in the middle and just watch these people go around you, almost like the Étoile. What's it, the Arc de Triomphe, you know, just going round and round and round, and you're in the middle watching this happen. So I'm not sure how this is all going to unfold. There's certain companies that I like in France. You know, I mean, it's
luxury
a wonderful
goods
place
companies
to visit,
is what you're going to say, isn't
you
it?
Know, which is luxury companies. And
yes.
And listen, there are quite a few, I must say, there are quite a few good. If you look at Safran, some of the engineering businesses, there's AI, you know, because of the education of the French. There's some, as Viv was saying, you know, the AI companies starting to emerge. But I mean, they'll probably continue, but I mean, to try and interpret it, and to try and see where this is going. The euro is just kind of just shrugged it off, you know, as we go, as we see today. You know, maybe a decimal point here or there, but there hasn't been anything dramatic in the currencies. And I think the same thing with the pound, and the dollar remains where it is. And I think investors just getting bored with politics and just carry on. you know, making fancy semiconductors and I don't know.
Talking about politics again, David, and this is the one thing that really disturbed me. France, we understand. The French, I love the French. I love going to France. I love the fact that they're mad. I love the fact that they're beautifully turned out. And the women, I don't want to be sexist or shallow here, but beautiful women. But we understand they're quite a volatile nation. But when it comes to Modi shaking hands with Putin on television today, that really disturbs me. So you got Putin, Xi, and Modi. And Modi gets in with Putin because he sees Xi getting in with Putin. And I find that really distasteful. And if I was, for example, Sir Keir Starmer, I would phone up Modi and say, what are you doing with this man? Wouldn't you?
I know. I find it odd because I don't think the Indian nation is – they're a capitalistic nation.
Yes.
You know, they're not left-wing. They're quite energetic. Their university is very good. They're producing some superb technicians, you know, engineers. In fact, everything they do, whether it's an accountant who whatever, you know, I think their universities are producing incredible people who are taking up very big jobs in the U.S. and so on. So I never see them as being a socialistic country or a left-wing country. You know? So I don't know what it is. It's obviously because of trade. I'm sure he gets very cheap coal there, very cheap oil, and also provides perhaps a market for some Indian goods. I don't know enough about their relationship, but it is – you know what I saw, Lindsay, and just to explain this, I don't think people, if you look in The Economist, and I didn't pick it up in the actual magazine, I was just, you know, they like all the media now, they put out a daily blog, and I was looking at the number of young people that have died in Russia because of the war, and died goes into the hundreds of thousands plus. And they pick this up from obituaries. They pick it up from, you know, from published notices. It's not official statistics, but they're quite accurate in that. And the number of people that have been injured goes into four or five times that amount in the war. And you just look at this and there's never an outcry. There's no outcry about the huge number of people that are dying because of this just fruitless war. Why do you want to be friends with Putin? You know, why on earth?
Well, you mentioned it. It's cheap energy. I mean, Modi has got the world's biggest population. India has overtaken China because of the China demographic problem that they've got. But India needs oil. And you know, they say the oil is $85 a barrel. He's getting it for $65 from Russia. So, of course, he's going to go and shake his hand. But I find it, and I think other people, other world leaders of G7 and G20, they should also phone up and say, no, come on now, you can't do this. We have to isolate this man. You are funding the killing. And that was the thing, the juxtaposition between two events today. Number one, Russia launched daytime missiles onto Kiev. Yeah. And hit the biggest children's hospital in Kiev.
Yeah, I know.
And people were killed, and they're still finding people dead there. And on the other hand, you've got Modi and Putin smiling and shaking each other's hands. I find it disgusting, David.
No, I agree with you. That's my whole point. I mean, thousands, hundreds, you know, of kids are dying. I'm talking the Russian, young Russian. You know, and you eventually run out of soldiers. People don't want to get killed. They want to be part of the world. They want to be at the Olympics. They want to be part of the Euros. You know, they don't want to be an isolated nation, which they are at the moment. But I think you're right. Where everybody came down on the Israelis, and there's been huge amount there because of deaths. And I'm not defending them in any way. I'm not taking any sides on this. But yeah, you know, people do die. I mean, citizens do die. You're entitled to criticize it. What, when they launched the rockets, did they say, no, this is going specifically to this point or what? These are indiscriminate. You can't really, from that kind of distance, pinpoint where they're going to hit. I that's why I'm saying I can't understand it. I can understand Kim Jong and you, whatever his name is, you know, and Putin, because he sells weapons to Russia. I can understand that relationship, but not Modi, you know. South Africa, you won't hear a thing. You know, you hear them very quiet about any of that, about the war in Russia. Even at this stage, there's no official statements.
What's happening in South Africa, by the way, internally, domestically?
It's quiet. It's actually quietened down a lot. I must tell you, I'm going to quote something now, but there's not much happening. It seems to be very, you know, we're still trying to consider where this is going. We haven't, nothing really has come out of the government and national unity. But I Peter Major. I love Peter Major.
He's great.
Yeah, he's great. And anyway, there's a interview this weekend, you know, with Chris Barron from Business Times, and he absolutely blasted Gwede Montashe, you know, blistering attack, saying that, putting Gwede Montashe is the equivalent of pancreatic cancer, you know, from which you never recover.
Good Lord. That's a bit rough.
This is old Peter, you know, and I think it's just one of those, those articles that you have to read, because he understands it. I've known Peter from a long time, you know, from the time that he came to South Africa originally, which has got to be 30, 40 odd years ago. He molded himself on Theodore Roosevelt, but he's got a very strong knowledge of the mining segment in South Africa, and he just goes into how Gwede Montashe has, you know, destroyed the South African mining industry, saying that Australia today, their coal industry is probably bigger than our mining industry. And it's worth reading if you can get it. It's just the Business Times, Gwede Montashe. But I think he lays out exactly what has happened, you know, how the politics, how Gwede Montashe's politics and rule over the mining industry has just killed it, you know, destroyed it, and that people do not want to come. Investors will not come, certainly as long as he's here. He says, the thing is, pancreatic cancer is bad. Montashe, as the Minister of Mining, is bad. I don't see how Ramaphosa could have found a worse guy to be mining minister. He had sufficient time to prove that nobody is blocking any kind of positive advancement in mining more than him. In other words, he's just blocking. So I think that's the one article I read. You know, there's still been a lot of discussion. Oh, the other one is about the Minister of Defense, who was our former Minister of Education. You know, where
this is what I don't understand. To interrupt you, how can you have a cabinet reshuffle and you have it in the UK, you have it everywhere, and you've got someone who's Minister of Defense, and then you suddenly say, right, you're Minister of Education now. How can they switch from one to the other? It's like you saying, I'm an accountant. Suddenly, I'm going to become a salesman. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Well, they seem to think that they've had experience in administering departments.
Isn't that rubbish?
It is rubbish. You know, I mean, what do you know about defense? First of all, to be honest, we've got a totally dysfunctional defense force. I don't think we've got a plane that flies or a soldier that could...
or a ship or a nuclear submarine that can actually go underwater.
So I'm saying, you know, it's in a dire situation. Very little money has been spent. It's deteriorating. We've got some soldiers up north, I think, in the DRC who continually die because come back in plastic bags because there's no one defending them. So I think the two areas this weekend that I saw, you know, being attacked, was a Minister of Defense and certainly old Gwede Montashe. So which are two major areas in that? So he had the chance, Cyril. He had the chance. You know, he's had a chance to put competent people in. But I think those two areas and mining, you know, Lindsay, we need mining. That's the whole basis.
It's still the basis of the South African economy. And it's the rand. If the commodity prices go up, the rand goes up. And it's not difficult. I mean, it may only be a few percentage points less than it used to be in 1970 when we made 1,100 tons of gold. And we were the kings of the world when it came to precious metals. Okay, so we're number six or number seven now, but when it comes to platinum and coal and iron ore, etc., this is still a huge part of our economy. You have to have someone in charge who knows how to do it, and you have to have a transport secretary or minister who knows how to ship the stuff to the ports to get it out to China, for goodness sake.
I know.
So easy.
Anyway, it is. It's important. Just to quote Peter again, this is the quote I was looking for. It says, South African mining is a dying industry. We were bigger than Australia in the 1980s. And I'm going to tell you something about that as well. Mm. Now their coal sector is probably four times bigger. Their coal sector is four times bigger than our total mining sector, in spite of the fact probably have more known minerals in Russia and the US put together. I say that because two of my brothers immigrated to Australia in the 1980s, in the mid-1980s, and that, and I couldn't understand how they could go there. You know, at that stage, we were significantly bigger. We had the world's most powerful mines. You know, we were still pretty much the mining capital of the world. And in Australia, they would dig a hole and get very excited. You know, I don't know what they found there. And this is the consequence, you know, serious today, because I've always measured what Peter quoted today. I've always measured the remembering when my brothers went and couldn't understand why on earth they would leave this stock exchange to go to the Australian stock exchange. Anyway, they proved right, you know, I proved wrong. So,
well, you know, in some ways.
Anyway.
Okay, I'm looking at the stock exchange news service. There's nothing today, David. We did have a jobs number from the United States on Friday. 260,000 new jobs were created. The unemployment rate went up, though. Tell us the statistical nicety surrounding that. Is it because of the removal of some people from the jobs market? They've just given up on jobs and therefore the rate goes up? How does it work? You create more jobs, but your unemployment rate goes up. What is that?
I think so. I think it is. What happening is that the job market is starting to put it in Powell's word, you know, it's balancing out. In other words, demand equals supply. I think a lot of the jobs being created are at very low levels. They're not high level jobs.
You mean like burger flippers and that sort of thing?
Yeah. The wage rate's kind of slowing down. So, you know, you're getting, I don't want to say, it is deflation in the employment segment and that. It's still robust. And I think he's got to be careful not to kill it completely. You know, he doesn't want to tip the U.S. economy into recession. He just wants it to be ticking on because that's also his mandate. You know, it's jobs is also his mandate. It's as well as interest rates and price stability. So the markets responded to it. I don't think that's anything we didn't expect. A lot of analysts have changed their views. We're going to get a good 6 months. So you ride it. You don't have to fight it. You know, we know that these things do come to an end somewhere along the line. And you've just got to watch out for it. It's just like a good party. You know, eventually when
time
the clock strikes
midnight
or there, it's time to go home. Hmm. But I mean, for the meantime, we can milk it. You know, we can enjoy it. So I'm happy to run this for another 6 months. And just looking at the US markets today, they're steady. But I don't know how much volume is there.
They're much more steady. I mean, steady is not the word. S&P 500 futures at the moment, 5,633. In 2008, during the global financial crisis, 2007, 2008, whatever it was, the S&P went down to 666. It's now nearly 5,666. It's 5,634 at the moment. It's rallied 5,000 points since in 6-7 years. It's the most extraordinary rally. When it falls, David, it's going to be fairly ugly, though. I want you to get out the way of that thing when it does fall.
You'll start to see it. You know what? It happens even if you miss a few percentage points down. You're still better off riding it out than just sitting back and watching it for the meantime.
Yeah,
and I think the beauty about markets is that if you're in liquid stocks and that's the answer, you can get out straight away. You literally can get out straight away.
Yes.
So
you're ready, in other words. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, you don't have to make a decision 3 months in advance, we're getting out, or so. Yeah, if it's property or something like that, it's always different. Or So that's what I love about stock markets. You can buy in the morning, sell in the evening. You know, it's.
Would you buy put options? You know, with volatility so low, because when markets go up, and the option volatility is low. So would you buy some out of the money put options in order to protect your clients and your own portfolio? Would you do that?
I just find it's easier to sell their shares because they become very expensive. Those, and then your clients always say, "Why you got this? Why did you spend $5,000 on this? You know, while I'm buying you protection."
Well, I would say to them, "Why do you have insurance on your car? I was driving along today and I smashed my car. That's why I buy insurance. It's called insurance, you silly man or woman." But anyway, that would be me, David. Mm-hmm. I watched Joe Biden on an ABC interview. I mean, I thought he did badly on the debate, and everybody did, and it was embarrassing, and he said he had a cold. He was on ABC, and they said, the bloke said to him, "Did you watch your performance on the debate?" And he stared at him, and he says, I don't know, I don't remember. And I thought, what do you mean? You either know or you don't know. His face looks really weird.
I know.
I'm sorry, I'm a fan of his, but he's got to go now. He's got to get in Kamala Harris and give the Democrats a chance, because he's doing a disservice to his party and to his population. I'm sorry.
I was just reading something out of Raymond James today and their research. And they put it Trump 60%. You know, they just say 60% chance. So their odds are in that area. They don't. And I think Congress as well. First of all, not only the House do they expect the Republicans to take the House, but I think also to take the Senate as well.
Mm.
So I'm just looking here where it is. We are increasing our odds for the election of former President Trump to 60% from 55.
Oh, my gosh.
And the odds of a Republican sweep to 45%, 30% chance of a divided government, 20% Democratic sweep, nothing. A Republican Senate increasing to 75% from 70%. And decreasing the odds of a Democratic House to 55% from 60. Oh, I didn't know that they still believe that they're going to hold that. But
There's only two people.
You might have a Democratic House, but Senate and President, you know, Republican. But the odds are, that's what the betting is at the moment, or that's what the reading is at the moment.
There are only two people, David, that can sit down with Biden, who looks just startled all the time and looks as though he's about to fall asleep. There's only two people that can persuade him to stand down, and one is his wife, Jill Biden, and she won't do that. She's very supportive of him because she loves him, obviously. But the other one is Barack Obama. He should take him aside and say, listen, this is the Democratic Party. It's bigger than you. Please do it for your country now, because you are deteriorating fast. And it's getting worse almost every day. Yeah. He can't hold a half-hour interview with anybody. He looks peculiar to me.
He has always, you know, I've always been concerned. I think we were discussing it with Viv the other night, that two of my friends who are both in the medical profession believe that he's got Parkinson's, you know, the expression on his face. And the fact that you have to give him a kick to get him to walk, you know, the way that which happens. Yeah. So you need to, almost like a car whose battery has failed, you know, you push it down the hill and kick start it. So even before this happened, I used to panic every time he got up and try to talk off the cuff, you know, answer questions. If he's very good at delivering prepared speeches, but he can't discuss anything. He just hasn't got the ability to actually talk.
And why should he have? He's 81 years old. He should be at home, you know, throwing a stick for the dog and having a cup of tea or something in the back garden. He shouldn't be the president of the United States. I mean, there's nothing against him. He's just too old and decrepit. David, speaking of old and decrepit, Harry Kane looks a little bit older than he was than he was a year ago. He's not quite as fast as he was, is he? Have you noticed that? He doesn't seem to latch on to things as quickly as he used to. No. But I'm very much looking forward to Spain against France. And unfortunately, because I live in the Netherlands, it's England against the Netherlands. I was going to hang up my flag of St. George outside my house, but I decided that probably there would be people throwing petrol bombs at the house and daubing my windows with anti-English graffiti. But it is very exciting, isn't it, Tuesday and Wednesday?
I think they are. And they're both good finals.
Yes.
I was disappointed in so disappointed in England as well. Thank goodness for Saka. And I like Mainoo as well, the youngster.
Yes.
And, they can do so much better. I just find them sluggish, old, boring. Foden hasn't come through in a big way. The Kyle Walkers. They're great players. I think they just...
Declan Rice is the one. Your man Declan Rice from Arsenal. I don't know how many passes he's made during the European Championships, but there must be 75% of them have been sideways. He's useless. Yeah,
I just all of them. That's how, there's nobody in the midfield that is making those penetrating runs and creating. When Saka got through. He looked around in the box. There was no one there. And he just kind of pushed it aimlessly. He said, well, I'm doing my job. I can't be responsible for everybody else. So anyway, England have got this way of kind of just brushing over or pushing over the line of the advantage line, making it to the next round. And you wonder how, Anyway, it's given us a... I go into the office and that's all we all sit down there and shouting at each other, just, cursing.
No, it is fantastic. It's a lovely diversion. The Olympics, which isn't my thing, and Wimbledon isn't my thing. Rugby isn't my thing either. But, there's lots of diversions while the markets drift higher. 5,630, the S&P September futures, all-time record highs nearly. Absolutely fantastic. You must be raking it in... David Shapiro.
The one thing I've learned is you never stand on a box and crow. You know how wonderful you are. You just shut up.
You're the exception. But I know that quietly you go about your business, and it's that's why you're still enduring.
You worry about what's going to happen tomorrow, whether you've made the right calls, whether there's something else that you can look at, all the time. I have to say one story I did like as well. Was the Ferrari story, which featured in the New York Times about the new factory, which is the EV factory. I think here you've got a stock that you can buy for luxury as well as for EV. But I'm always fascinated by this brand. I'm, Lindsay, as you
know. You're a shareholder, aren't you?
I am a shareholder. I drive a little Peugeot, which got beaten up on the weekend by someone crashing into me, and I'm very sad. But it's a very down to earth car, and that's I can drive that. So I'm not a petrol head or a piston head, but I'm always fascinated by Ferrari, how people are drawn to this brand and how they come out with these models, which for people who enjoy motor vehicles who enjoy driving, just astonishing. So a very good story, and that's why I buy the company. You can recognize quality, when you see it, especially at that level.
You can never ever replace a Ferrari. There's Lamborghinis, there's Aston Martins, there's Jaguars, etc. But when you say the word Ferrari, the barriers to entry, there's nothing that can compare with a Ferrari, and that's why you've been very shrewd in investing in that company, I think.
You mentioned Lamborghini, just a headline now. Lamborghini post record 2023. I don't know Lamborghini. I can't spell it. That's why I won't buy it.
I can spell it for you, but not
Ferrari. Yeah.
David, thank you very much for your time, as always, on a Monday. David Shapiro is from Sasson Securities, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.